Hello and welcome. This is part two of our audio recordings from our recent event, The Transformation of Digital Trials in a Post-COVID-19 World. In this workshop, we invited participants from across Europe to join us for a half day of discussion and thought leadership surrounding the trends in digital health trials and the similarities and differences we are seeing across continents. Join me for this recording of our panel discussion. I'm very pleased to introduce our panel today. We have with us, joining us from Hamburg, Germany, Dr. Oler Dahmen. And Dr. Oler is the CEO of KFGN. This is a managed network of outpatient research sites specializing in the management and execution of clinical trials. Dr. Oler also sits on the board of PRASHA, which is an EU research network. They represent across Germany, the UK, Poland, Bulgaria, several other European countries. So we're very pleased to have you with us, Dr. Oler. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'd also like to introduce Ahmed Albayti. Ahmed is the founder and CEO of Medulin. He has been a leader in the digital healthcare space, delivering to healthcare organizations across the board. We've been playing in pharma, biosciences, the payer spaces. Before founding Medulin, Ahmed led the tech practice at Partners Healthcare, and he continues to inspire his team here at Medulin and throughout the healthcare universe. So thank you so much, Ahmed, for joining us today as well.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Yes. So I'm curious to hear just sort of your gut reaction to the report outs from those various breakout rooms. There was obviously a lot of very rigorous conversation. I was very happy to see some parity between the groups on some different key themes, but would love to hear from each of you sort of the top thing that stood out or the top kind of aha that you found compelling or interesting. Could we start with you, Dr. Oler?
Yes, sure. So first of all, it was quite impressive to see the results of your breakout sessions, and some things sound quite familiar to me. Other things were at least the way you prioritized them were quite kind of new. And so what I really liked about the first breakout room was the notion of evidence. So that's something we heard also within our discussion with startups and digital health care companies. So evidence is a huge topic, especially now in Germany, where we have this Digital Care Act, which is a fast track for reimbursement. So I really like the idea, and also the way we were looking what do we have to take into account when we start our startup in terms of who should we it's not only UX experiences but also the patient journey as itself. For the second part, the second breakout room, I really like the idea about the digital tools and the validation of this tool. I think that's quite crucial for in the future for clinical trials, and especially if you want to do them more virtually or more remotely, you have to have validated tools at place which go far beyond than just an Apple Watch with a ECG. It's more than this, and so I was really pleased to see your ideas on this part as well. And for the last thing, and that's also quite important for us when we conduct trials, is patient engagement. That's a huge topic. And we need to take into account that we have different patient populations, different people, different needs. And so there might be also a selection bias. I really like this thought. If we become too digital, so we need to take into account which kind of patient do we need for the trials, and have them have this patient centricity when we set up our projects. That's my first reaction to the breakout rooms. Thank you very much for sharing your ideas.
Indeed. And Ahmed, would you build on that?
Yeah. So thanks, Ola, for sharing that. And I'd say everybody has been very productive, obviously, and flexible about working virtually to produce a lot of ideas. You mentioned parity with the last group a little bit, Stephanie, but I actually found something complete, and it's very obvious. So when I stated it's not going to be particularly groundbreaking, but the interplay between selecting technology, study design, and patient engagement. I thought today the three groups really brought that forward a whole lot more. I'm talking about a fundamental shift in how you conduct clinical studies, where you have to do these things almost at the same time and in a very iterative way. So as you think through patient engagement, you have to circle back and understand how it's going to affect endpoint collection. And then as you think about which endpoints you're really seeking to prove out in your hypothesis and learning objectives, is going to affect the way you pick your technologies, then how well your technologies work and how they might affect the different groups in the studies and their preferences will affect whether some technologies are offered to others. It really is about the interplay of the three things. And it brings forward that this new notion that says, you know, this has become a whole new level of cross-functional collaboration to get these studies to work. And then for the studies to be viable and credible and remove the biases. But if you're continuously kind of tweaking your different strategies of technology, study design, and patient engagement, you are inadvertently becoming more patient-centric, which is great. But you just really need that cross-functional ability, right? And it's a far cry from when I was doing studies at Partners of Healthcare, where we had a bit more time and leeway to do things sequentially, I feel, and really lock down each of these aspects as you go along. Here, you know, you're really being asked to be iterative, super collaborative, and, you know, make sure that you balance out all the needs in order to come to an optimal study. So that was my big takeaway, which I know, again, it's very obvious from anyone who's been in the breakouts, but it didn't really rise up with our last group as much. So I thought that was interesting.
No, I think that's terrific. That's insightful. Obviously, you have had the opportunity to participate in both of our workshops in the U.S. and here in the EU today. So it's nice to bring forward sort of the comparable experience. I wonder if we can riff on that a little bit. One of the groups brought up this notion of improving quality in our clinical trials, but also sort of managing costs. When you factor in that cross-section that you described, Ahmed, with sort of patient engagement and reducing burden on patients, and you've got sort of the who is going to pay question, wonder if you could sort of address that cross-section a little bit in terms of improving quality, lowering costs, but factoring all these other things into the game.
Yeah, no, that's great. So I talked about these kind of cross-functional needs when you're putting the study together. I think that more and more we're seeing stakeholder engagement, meaning the broader ecosystem, being brought into the study conversation. So where your patients will come from, the registries, the payers, they're all interested in playing earlier in the evidence strategy, in influencing it. So they don't have to deal with the startup that shows up or the partnership between the pharma company and the startup that missed a big component of how, you know, HCPs will view this thing, et cetera, right? So in figuring that out, I think the ecosystem has really stepped up in making those offers, and that creates larger scale and ability. I don't know how it's happening in Europe, but even there, I have seen small patient population studies, especially where really local organizations, including the sick funds and the formularies, are actually providing and opining advice early for those who will take it, on how the study could have the right evidence strategy across all that, for the quality, for the safety, and for the ability for the study to prove out an adoption value proposition, right? For more than just the endpoints of the study, but also how it'll affect whatever it is that gets launched, whether it's pharmacological or digital combination product.
No, I think that's interesting as you consider the differences potentially between the EU and the US. I wonder, Dr. Oler, if you could perhaps comment a little bit on this notion of designing for commercial acceptance, right? Which is going to be very different in the EU than what we're seeing over here in the US. you know, determining proper endpoints, et cetera, being able to design for that regulatory need in Europe?
Well, from my point of view, I think we just started the discussions here in Europe and especially in Germany. The discussion, especially about outcome-based reimbursement, I think that's something new to the system, especially here in Germany. And I've seen some discussions going on now, not that much of the, when we with regard to new drugs, but more when we talk about new digital solution for the patients. So everything beyond the drug, and there we have a certain new willingness to between the different partners to discuss with each other how these kind of systems should be set up, how the outcome should be measured, what kind of endpoints are relevant. And then this arena I see already as a first start of discussions between insurance companies and pharma companies and digital startups. But from my perspective, it's new to the market and just starting.
Yeah. The so Ahmed, just kind of playing off of that, Ariola spoke a little bit about this notion of thinking holistically and what those ecosystem partnerships might look like. So based on kind of what Dr. Oler said, where do you kind of see the differences and challenges, you know, between the EU and US? Where are we seeing those differences? Where are we seeing potential parity between the two?
Yeah, I think Europe has a really an opportunity to use this as an access point. Here in US, we are seeing the traditional institutional places that always had more resources kind of always get the best studies, if you will. Basically, they get the funding, etc. I think Europe has always had a little bit more of a level playing field. And with digital, and Ulla can certainly comment on this, but there is an inherent leveling of the playing field. So someone can have a better experience with the people that they know. Some of the activities they can do digitally as things get adopted with the clinic or the practice that they know more than to have to sign up for a study and then make their way over there and have to deal with people they don't know and so on. So that ability to reduce some of that friction is inherent when you design virtual and hybrid studies. And it may not have such a stark impact, I think, for cost and patient experience in Europe, because maybe it's not as skewed towards these kind of institutional brands running most of the big studies. But I suspect it will have the same kind of effect over time. Right now, people are scrambling. How do I change my study? How do I launch this thing that I committed to do? So much is riding on this. Is it really safe for me to continue? But I think in a few months, I'm confident people will start to see, oh, while my engagement is dropping, I need to do something about the fact that people don't see people as much anymore. And that's not good for people to stay in the study. I'm seeing lower friction on certain access things. I'm seeing the flexibility to make it easier for my participants and my patients. And so that is starting to create a lower bar for these studies to run more smoothly. But that's just kind of where I am right now. Future is out there. We'll see what happens.
Do you feel that, and this really question is for both of you, whoever wants to jump in first, and you mentioned, you know, kind of this hybrid and virtual model of clinical trials, and those are becoming more and more common. We're less dependent, as you said, on patients going into a clinic, filling out paperwork, and so forth. I'm curious about maybe particular challenges that might exist for doing this in a patient-centric way across Europe. Multiple geographies, multiple languages, availability of internet access to, you know, a clinical center, those sorts of things. Just curious if you can comment on you know, where we might see challenges for doing these things in a patient-centric way, given those.
Ulla?
Well, I think, again, from a German, but also from a European perspective, what we don't have that, we don't have, the situation in the US and Europe is a little bit different. In the US, you have it's quite common to have dedicated sites doing clinical research, whereas in Germany or in Europe, you have also small practices, privately owned practices of physicians taking place taking part in the clinical trial. So for them, in a more remote and virtual setup, their role will completely change. And it's also the question, who's actually then doing more of this coordinative tasks, which are becoming more and more important in the virtual trial setup. And I think that's the advantage of the US market, where you already have these professionalized site networks who can step in and take on this roles. And in Germany, yes, there are some. We are one of them, but it's not the majority. And for the physician as a PI, he will have some different roles. Probably just conducting single visits and not all visits anymore within the trial.
Right, right. And I mean, I would add that this coordinator function now goes beyond a person or a team as we move forward, right? Things become much more automated with checks and balances. Yeah. Already seeing some of that in clinical studies that had to be revised recently to match safety standards for what gets delivered in the home versus what could be done completely virtually, or it could be self-administered. I personally looked at some protocols that are now expecting patients to do certain things themselves, otherwise they won't be able to participate, and the alternative is much worse than not participating. So ways of verifying what's happening in the study using digital technology is really going up fast. I mean, we are seeing tools that use sensors, photography, etc., on a consumer smartphone being accepted as ways to stick to the protocol, because it is verifiably so that something happens. Hence the beauty of some of these digital things. It's been here for over a decade. It's finding utility in ways because there was a forced issue to do it. And if we had asked about it previously, it would not have been acceptable to include that in the protocol. Whereas today it is, because now some of the healthcare community is also getting educated on just how reliable is it to know if something or someone did something. Turns out it's more reliable than when they used to come to the parking lot and fill out their diaries, even though that's what you were used to. But it just needed that shift to happen, you know. But also, it's okay for the healthcare community to question technologies, because a lot of stuff has not been certified from this perspective. And this is making the technology community stronger by being forced to reconcile the requirements that they may already have. It's not an issue. They just have never formalized them. I think the ride sharing is a great example. Those have been used in studies before, but now people are talking about, can we please pre-certify which ride sharing driver, car, is ready to handle this type of patient, wheelchair access, you know, sanitization, safety issues, etc., can all be tagged so that the right driver can show up and there is less friction, right? Was not possible before, has never been possible before. And even though it was never really done that level, now it's required. And I like it. I like it when things are there and can be done and you have to go through some requirements, and now it's all very transparent as to why it is possible. So this is what I'm looking forward to is how Europe has a much better view, I think, generally on protecting the public and the consumer. And as they force everybody to go through this process, I think Europe has the chance to kind of teach the world how to do this properly with the technology that already exists.
Do you agree, Dr. Roller?
I do. And I think it's important also in this more virtual setup to have a strong platform in place, which helps us to manage the single work packages and the workflow within a trial. It's one thing to have someone in place who's managing the transportation to the patient, but it's also really managing the different tasks people have, and the patient will be more and more responsible for the initial data generation and not the PI anymore, and that needs a certain education and a certain guidance. And So that's something we need to manage then in the future. And there are already good solutions out there, especially in the US. And we are waiting here in Europe to have them here in place as well.
I think I'd like to take some questions in a moment, but I think before I do that, I'd like to circle back and ask the question that Frank actually asked to start off or to kick off the output from the workshops, which is, what does the patient journey really mean and why does it matter? So I think we've touched on it quite a bit, but I would love to kind of close out my questions of you with the way Frank started us in terms of kicking off our workshop output. What does it mean and why does it matter? Dr. Ola?
Ola, do you want to go first or?
If you want to, please start.
Yeah, I'll start not to end on a sort of a less than bright note, but I think it's patient journey is such an overused premise. We're really talking about so many people involved in the patient's care journey, right? It's very much a care journey. And when you ask different people, Stephanie, you get different answers because some journeys are defined from a very qualitative standpoint, meaning someone, you know, qualitatively worked with patients to describe it. Another one will be very quantitative. I can tell you all the data points associated with the patient when they went in, when they didn't come out, but I can't tell you how they felt or why they made this, why did they go to this practice versus that or get this extra lab test when this other patient didn't. And then there is like the life aspects of the patient journey that neither are capturing because we focus so much on healthcare instead of sort of life care, right? There are so many reasons why people have exacerbations, as an example, that have nothing to do with clinical, but all due to social determinants of health. And that does enter into the clinical study as well. So I would venture to say that because our patient journeys have always been sort of missing dimensions, our studies have always been biased, right? I'm going to make that bold statement. All studies have always been biased. And people optimized studies to get to those endpoints for regulatory, for profit, but have never really truly understood the patient journey. Is that really going to change? I think it is, for sure. Because now some of the leveling playing field that is naturally happening is going to need to be dealt with. And I think for some studies, it will really change the way we understand the patient journey. And I think that it's great. I'm even thinking that the notion of study design should include patients. I'm going to go as far as saying, why do we not have co-created study design so we can bring the engagement requirements, technology requirements, life requirements all together with the patients and say, if I were to design my study today and you would be the type of person that would benefit from this study, how would you interact with it? What would you be comfortable doing yourself? And, you know, et cetera. Co-created study designs have been discussed many times by patient-centered or outcome research places, you know, but has never been embraced because it doesn't check off the other boxes. Can I do it cheaply? Can I do it on time? Can I launch my drug? Can I launch my digital therapeutic, et cetera? I think it's time we revisited that patient journey and think about, you know, again, the technology is there. How do we commit to it at this point in time? This is the right time to do it.
Ahmed, I like your comment. What I especially like about your comment is this notion about life cycle, because now when we at least in the field of clinical research, we just think about the clinical trial when we are looking at the patient, and I think we. Especially through the new technologies, wearables in place, we have the opportunity to go even beyond the trial and see how we can stay in contact with the patient, what kind of value add can we deliver to the patient also through digital solutions. And patient journey from a more from a typical clinical trial perspective has a lot of to do with trust, building up a trust relation right at the beginning and keeping up this trust and even beyond the trial. And I think that's only possible if you show if you take your time for the patient, but also to make the value add transparent to the patient and the benefits of such a trial.
Thank you. I do have a couple questions coming in that I'd like to get to. I know we are coming up on the end of our workshop, so let's take a few minutes to take questions from the group. I would invite those participating to either ask your question directly to our panel if you choose, or if you would prefer to type it into the chat, I'd be happy to represent your question for you. So I do have one for Dr. Oler. The question is, what are impacts of the fact that many clinical trials in Europe are run in Eastern Europe for economic reasons? Are there issues or impacts that are relevant to our conversation today, considering that there's a geographic sort of preference for where clinical trials are run in the EU?
I'm not really sure whether I understood the question correctly. What kind of impacts do we get that we have a concentration running trials in Eastern Europe, or what is the question about?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Todd. Sure.
Yeah, let me clarify. So, I mean, I know that there is enormous, you know, I wouldn't say enormous, but there is a lot of activity in Eastern Europe when it comes to clinical trials, particularly drug trials, right? Yeah. And certainly there's economic reasons. There's also the engagement reasons that it's easier to engage those patients. Perhaps it's also because there are cultural differences as well as far as medical care goes in those countries. And there's, I would think, implications there as it relates to our conversation today in terms of thinking about digital and clinical trials. And I was wondering if you had any sort of top level thoughts about that. And if not, that's fine also.
No. The reason why most of the trials or huge part of the trials are run also in eastern part of Europe is the standard of care and then this and also the how accessible the care is, medical care is, and that's has a huge effect on the willingness of people and the motivation of people taking part in the trial. So having digital solutions in place will help other countries to perform and recruit higher number of patients in the future, and allowing also to include more effectively other countries than the Eastern European ones. That would be my initial
statement. Okay. Yeah.
I have a question for Ahmed. So for years, all participants in healthcare said the patient stands in the center of our decisions and treatments. We have to consider that in reality, maybe not. Is it digitization in the end that now brings the patient to the center, in your opinion?
Okay, another one of those not so happy answers, I think. But always, there's always the things that we can do. I think ironically, the current digitization, what's happened literally in the last 6 months or so, has really brought technology to the center. Where everybody's forced to use something new, and we're making things that have never talked before have started to talk before, and so on and so forth. And in the back of my mind, it creates this fear for me that as bad as it was with the Googles and the Apples and all the other guys, you know, kind of knowing too much about us, it's only gotten worse, right? And so I think the first step has been around normalizing how to use technology better. And we're not out of that yet. I've talked to my colleagues and contacts in Europe as well, even though they are different from the US. We have this situation where technology has become the center. However, I do believe that the awakening around, wow, for us to continue doing things, we're even more reliant on an empowered, educated, engaged patient than before. It is now putting an emphasis on, now that technology is quote unquote normalizing, as in things are starting to become a bit less variable, I would say, and that's just a forced issue. We're gonna go from technology being the center of attention right now and discussion to the patient who has to use that technology in order for things to move forward becoming the center. And things like, oh, my, I didn't used to have the right broadband access, therefore I can't access, I can't participate in a study. We're not even in our discussion, right? So I do believe that that the next step is going to be about the patient. But right now, I think everybody's swamped with technology is the center of what things happen. And I'm a little disappointed by that, but it's probably just a necessary evil as long as we commit to it not taking over.
Okay, I have a follow-up question to that, Ahmed, for you. You were mentioning the life journey of the patient, so how the patient feels. Many studies use patient reporting outcomes to evaluate how a patient is feeling and dealing with the disease. Do you think that PRO is sufficient to capture this patient aspect? And if not, what would you suggest to consider?
I think that in some scenarios it is, but we have already encountered scenarios where it is not, because we had different kind of novel corroborated data sets. For example, pain management is one that comes up a lot. And it's been shown in many studies now that we have comparative data around mobility, movement, and communication, other basically indicators that have shown that a lot of the pain management data has been wildly inaccurate as compared to, you know, whether the person was able to move around, which was a much better indicator of their pain management than the PRO. What it does mean, though, is that we can better calibrate those PROs going forward, not abandon them, and ensure that we can take the signal out of some of that noise and actually make them more reliable. So I do believe PROs are here to stay. You're going to see even more. I do believe that the validation of clinical outcome assessments will become so much more rigorous, and we now have the tools to make that happen. So that is really a growth area for us is PROs and corroborating data sets.
Great, thank you. I have one last question that we'll have time for here for Dr. Oler. This one is, how much weight will the availability of digital solutions in a trial have on your decision to participate in that trial? So smaller companies may have less options for implementing digital solutions as they don't have the same resources or systems already in place as larger companies do. So do you think it will be harder for these companies to find clinical sites to participate in their trials?
I think if we come up with a platform which can be used to integrate single site, then it will be possible also to include the GP with his patient population or her patient population within a trial. So, but you're right. If we expect that they should be capable to integrate these tools by themselves, it won't work. And so, it needs to have, from my perspective, a central platform in place, infrastructure in place to integrate the different partners in the trial setup. Otherwise, you would limit the number of sites to the ones who have this accessibility to these new tools.
Great. Well, I think we're coming up on the end of time for our panel. I'll turn it back to Todd. If there's any sort of last minute words of wisdom, Ahmed or Dr. Oler, you'd like to share out before I do that, I'm happy to give you a minute or two. Otherwise, just want to thank you again for participating in our panel and certainly appreciate your insights and your ability to sort of share out your thoughts and expertise.